everyone, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and it is such a pleasure and a delight to have you with me today. And as always, this show is an opportunity to have an in-depth conversation about topics that are really relevant for our health and our well-being. And it's an opportunity to also get as empowered as possible with truthful information so you can make the most empowered decision and informed decision possible. That's what it's all about. And as always, I have a fantastic show for you today. I want to just mention a few things. First of all, in just a week, I will be winging my way down under. I have a 8-week lecture tour scheduled throughout Australia and New Zealand. So for those of you who may be listening in Australia and New Zealand, I am giving you fair warning. I'm on my way, and I hope you'll be able to attend the many events that are scheduled. I actually am very excited about coming back to Australia, and I will be presenting programs in Melbourne, in Sydney, on the Sunshine Coast, in Perth, in far north Queensland, in New Zealand. There was a wonderful women's conference that's happening in New Zealand, as well as lecturing in Auckland. So I will be covering the Southern Hemisphere as far as Australia and New Zealand is concerned. And if you want to know more about my lecture schedule and the various events that will be happening, then you can just go and check out my events page on my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. And there's another website that has my full itinerary, and that is fatlossaustralia.com.au. That's fatlossaustralia.com.au. I hope to see as many of the Aussies and Kiwis as possible while I'm down there. It's always great to be back in Australia. For those of you who may not know this, I actually am very privileged to have a residency status in Australia. So I like to tell people I am bilingual. I speak American and I speak Aussie, and that's no mean feat. So I'm thrilled to be able to do both. I also want to let everyone know that I have a great website, which is What Women Must Know. If you haven't yet opted in, please do so, because I have some very special reports that will come your way. I also have many of my published articles available there, some videos. You know, this is the place where you can get the truth about your hormones. And we all need to get the truth about our hormones, because there are a lot of myths and misinformation out there, and they can lead us astray. So we need to know what's really happening with our own body. And my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, is also a great resource, because I've been very, very enthusiastically posting these days. So I have quite a few posts up each day of things that I have been discovering, involved with, or just wanting to pass on as great information or recipes or revelations of one sort or another. So going over and liking me at What Women Must Know will just keep you right there on the leading edge, and that's exactly where you want to be. Okay, so let's jump right into the middle of our conversation and topic for today. I am always inspired by people who have been able, through adversity, to turn that experience around and come out the other side, not only more empowered, but have taken on a mission that transforms thousands, millions of people's lives. And I have such a woman on the call today who is my guest. I'm very excited and privileged to have Carol Baggerly with me. She is the founder of a website called Grassroots Health. We're talking about the subject of breast cancer, which started as her own personal journey, and then what she discovered that is a critical piece of helping to prevent and even support the treatment of breast cancer. And we're going to be talking about the amazing role of vitamin D. So, Carol, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much. It's an absolute delight, and thank you for helping spread the word.
Oh, that's my favorite thing to do. I just want to tell people that you are the director and founder of an organization called Grassroots Health, which is primarily focused on creating awareness about the profound importance of vitamin D for optimal health. And your organization is also developing and doing substantiating research to support the use of vitamin D as a prevention strategy against diseases like cancer. Carol's interest in this field began with a breast cancer diagnosis in 2005. She underwent the conventional treatment, which we all know was cut, burn, and poison, which included a mastectomy, radiation, chemo. And out of that, I'm sure, really challenging time, Carol, you really found a mission and a purpose to support not only your health, but as I said, the health of thousands, probably millions of people as a result, which must be so rewarding for you at this point in your life.
Well, it's extremely rewarding to have found it. And if I may, I'd like to tell your listeners a little bit about the journey, because to me that was substantial too. For 2 years after my treatment with breast cancer, first of all, I had a mindset that said there's got to be a better way. I mean, this whole cut, burn, and poison just did not sound like a good thing to do. And so I spent 2 years doing rather extensive research into all kinds of alternative therapies, you name it. And almost accidentally, I was scheduled for a standard physical. And my doctor said, Carol, you have osteopenia. And I said, why? I work out, I eat right, you know, I do all these great things. And she says, well, you probably have a vitamin D deficiency. And I said, what's that? And she told me a little bit and gave me a prescription. And I went home and I went back to my research on cancer. And then I still apologize to some of our group and I say it took me 2 hours before I keyed in the words vitamin D and cancer. And up popped immediately, this was February the 13th, 2007, and I will never, never, never forget the day, a research paper written by Dr. Cedric Garland of the University of California, San Diego, and I live in San Diego, showing that with a higher level, about 50 nanograms per milliliter of a vitamin D serum level, you could reduce the incidence of breast cancer by 50%. I looked at that, and I literally started shaking. A couple of seconds later, the tears came down my face. And, of course, the brain kicks in. I'm a very skeptical person, and I said, this can't be true. And so I called up a friend I have at UCSD, and I said, is this guy a flake? And she laughed, and she said, Carol, he's not only not a flake, he's been doing this research with breast cancer and vitamin D for 30 years. I said, you've got to be kidding. 30 years, and we're just now knowing about it? And she said, he's very discouraged because people aren't listening. And I said, I'm listening. I had been retired since 2001 from a marketing and technical job. I ran a software service company, and the marketing side of the world was second nature. So very shortly thereafter, my husband and I took off all over the United States and Canada to meet with the vitamin D researchers to say, what is the message? Because if you're going to do a sales thing to sell something, a message, you've got to know what it is. And every single one of them met with us, and they were so eager. This is just kind of like, I'm privileged to help them get their word out, because they don't have truly a sales force. They do their best, they do marvelous research, and it gets published, and somebody reads it maybe. But in terms of getting the word out, so the calling is not just to do stuff that reinforced my need to get the word out about breast cancer, but I just, every day I live to help these marvelous researchers. We now have 42 of them from around the world on our panel saying, go, Carol, go. So that's how I wake up every day. I go.
Well, you really are the go-to site for all the latest research as well as fantastic webinars. You You do these phenomenal webinars. I've listened to several of them. You have these leading experts from around the world who share their information, their knowledge on your free webinars and provide, of course, the test. We'll get more into what you provide on your website so people know about that. But it's such an educational place to go around the vitamin D world. And I think vitamin D is getting more attention, but certainly we need a whole lot more of education to know all of the benefits and why it is such a critical hormone, really. I mean, it's kind of misnamed. So why don't we talk about some of the things a woman should know about vitamin D?
Okay. I think let's stick with breast cancer for a minute. Because I think obviously that's a pretty key one. For anybody who does not have or has not had breast cancer, the key message, again, back from our panel is no matter what, all health conditions that we currently know about that can be helped with vitamin D, get your serum level, and this is a blood test. This is not something you magically know. Between 40 and 60 nanograms per milliliter, and that's on our website, grassrootshealth.net, but the measure is 40 to 60. And if you do that, it will help reduce the incidence of breast cancer and of many, many other diseases. If you've already had breast cancer or even still have it or have some residue of it, the message is still the same. Get your serum level up there. It actually helps during breast cancer treatment. There are a number of chemotherapeutic agents which actually deplete your body's supply of vitamin D, thereby harming not only possibly the breast, but many, many other organs in your body. So you really need to maintain that vitamin D level. And unfortunately, at this stage, there are a lot of physicians that don't understand that. But regardless, that's really important. With the people that have had breast cancer, the next stage that a lot of women are very concerned about is, I don't want it to come back, or having a recurrence. And Pamela Goodwin, one of the researchers out of Mount Sinai up in Toronto, did a research project, and she showed after 12 years, first of all, the women came in, they were diagnosed with cancer, they had their vitamin D test. 12 years later, they were looked at again, and those with the higher serum levels, above 30 nanograms per milliliter, had a 50% lower chance of a recurrence. So it never stops helping. So for breast cancer, it's really important. Within the month of January, another research paper came out about BRCA1. And this was marvelous. They got into the biology of how vitamin D can help even BRCA cancer. And it really, really works. That paper will be presented at an upcoming vitamin D conference in a couple of weeks. And we will have more details about that for everybody. So this most recent thing of a woman having both of her breasts lopped off because she was afraid of the potential of getting cancer because she had the BRCA1 mutation, I'm not sure that, you know, everybody has to make their own choices about what, you know, what kind of level of risk they can live with. But regardless, there's help for everybody.
Well, you know, that is quite profound, and maybe we can talk a little bit about how that works, but we know, and I've been talking about this, that the BRCA1 is a gene expression. It's not a hardwired mistake as found in gene mutations. It's a software mistake, so to speak, in our gene expressions, which can be altered and impacted by environment, by food, by stress, by a variety of things. So that's exciting to hear that there is a published study talking about how vitamin D can support gene expression of the BRCA1 gene, which is enhancing its effectiveness as a tumor suppressor gene, which does what the name says, suppress tumor. Do you have more information on how exactly vitamin D is helping to prevent and actually support treatments and prevention and post treatment options for breast cancer? What's
the,
you know,
the how is really not as well defined at this point in time, Dr. Selman, as the fact that it does, which is why I was so excited about this paper. One of our webinars is done by Dr. Joellen Welsh, and I don't remember the date at this point in time, but if somebody wants to look on grassrootshealth.net and click on our videos tab, they can kind of search a little bit there. And Dr. Welsh is a biological type researcher with breast cancer and vitamin D, and there's some more information that she presented. And again, all the results seem to say vitamin D certainly helps with apoptosis. That's a major, major, major piece of its action within breast cancer.
And it's also an anti-inflammatory, so we know that inflammation fuels all chronic illnesses, including cancer, so it must be working on that level as well, I would imagine.
It does, of course. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, from your experience, do you find that most women are unaware of the role of vitamin D in breast cancer?
I find that most women are definitely unaware, and or they are unaware of, at this point in time, things have changed a lot since 2007 when we started, like when we toured the United States and Canada and actually the world, but when we first toured in 2007, the highest level of a supplement international units that was on the store shelves at that time was 400 international units. Now you can walk into any pharmacy in the United States, almost any pharmacy, and find where the supplement might have 2,000 IUs, it might have 4,000 IU, 5,000, and even 10,000 are on the shelves. So there's a great deal more awareness. On the other hand, we did a, in one particular city, we were working in conjunction with a local pharmacy, and we had a table in their pharmacy for people to learn about vitamin D. And when people would come in, especially women, I would say, what do you know about vitamin D? And I would get a wave of the hand, and they say, oh, I take it. I don't need any more. And I said, I'm really glad to know that you take it. Can you please tell me how much you take? And almost invariably, I would get an answer sort of like, I'm taking 1,000 IU, or I take it with my calcium or something like that. My follow-on question would be, do you know what your serum level is? And the answer was 100% of the time they did not know. And I said, well, the probability that you are taking enough to get your serum level to 40 nanograms per milliliter is very low. Based on our research, again, which is published, which actually there's a good chart on our website that says, depending upon where you are, to get the majority of the population, the entire population of women, well, maybe not the entire, let's make it 88% or 90% of the U.S. population to that level, it's going to take people taking somewhere around 8,000 IU a day, not one.
Wow.
And the other part that's really important is people ask me all the time, Carol, how much should I take? And I have to very honestly say, I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because without a test, you don't know where you're starting. And for that individual, everybody responds differently. And you can't tell without a test and without trying a different dose for yourself. So that's just really important to do, is to do a test at least to get a baseline.
And I'm so glad you're mentioning that, because this is the big problem. You can be taking whatever dose you may be taking, but you have no objective way of discerning where you actually are with your levels. And because it is so critical to stay and to achieve that optimal range and maintain it, you can't guess at it. It's not going to work. There are a lot of people who are inefficient at absorbing vitamin D. It may be the kind of vitamin D they have. It may have to do with their makeup. I see that a lot. Or what people don't understand, if you are overweight or obese, you are not accessing that vitamin D hormone it's kind of getting trapped in your fat cells, and you do not necessarily arrive at optimal levels, even though you may be taking high amounts of vitamin D. So it is absolutely critical to get your blood test done. I always tell my patients that's the number one thing they need to know. I always look at that, and it's true. People go, well, I'm taking my vitamin D. I'm taking, you know, 1,000 units or whatever. You know, I'm good. I go, well, that's a meaningless statement. You must have a number. You must have your blood test drawn to see what your vitamin D levels are, or else you may never hit the bullseye.
Right. I'd like to put in a plug for the research program that Grassroots Health is running for those that might want to do a vitamin D test through us. People can actually order a test online and get a kit to do at home, and also contribute their information to help us do a major research project. And this research is a fantastic set of information for people, because right now we are the largest group of people in the world who have vitamin D levels in that 40 to 60 range. And the research that we are now able to do to start getting the word out even more to the public health officials and the rest of the world is coming from the contribution of these people. Participating in the study is totally self-funded. We're not funded by grants and or supplement companies or anything. Each individual contributes, actually, their information, as well as the actual fee is $65 per test. And they sign up to answer some questions and do a blood spot test twice a year, hopefully, or for a five-year period, and we track all those health outcomes. And we're getting some marvelous pieces of information out of it.
So let me just encourage people to check out grassrootshealth.net, because this is a way where you can, first of all, get the test. If you have health insurance, this test is covered as part of your basic workup. But if you do not have health insurance, then this is another option available to you for a really inexpensive cost to get that test kit done. You actually do it at home. It's like you prick your finger and put some blood on a blotting paper and send it back to the lab. You don't have to even go and get a blood drawn. And this is going to give you one of the most valuable pieces of information you have for your health, because we're going to talk more about the many benefits of vitamin D. This isn't just about supporting healthy breasts and protecting against breast cancer or helping people recover from breast cancer. There's so much more that vitamin D is doing, and one of the most important things to look after your health is to get a number. Remember, you just cannot assume that the levels you are taking are actually getting into that optimal range. So that's a wonderful, wonderful service you're doing, Carol. It makes it so easy for people. I know people who are doing your program, and it just is great. You know, they just pay their yearly fee, get the test sent to them, and they are taking responsibility for their health and monitoring something as important as vitamin D very easily. So good for you for coming up with that. And plus, you're collecting all the data. Do you have any, you know, insights into what you've been learning so far from the data you've been collecting?
Oh, certainly. A couple of big things that I think are really, really significant. The first paper that we published very clearly showed that the upper level of an intake of up to 30,000 international units a day. Now, I'm not recommending this, mind you. It's just that that's very clear in the research study itself, that there was nobody that even began to get into a hypercalcemic range that was considered a sign of potential toxicity. So the other part of that safety message, though, was that as people got higher and higher, like let's say you got to 50 nanograms per milliliter, which is kind of mid-range of what we are suggesting, you take more vitamin D, and the rate of increase of your D level, it does not go up in a straight line. It more or less levels off. So in order to get higher and higher serum levels, you really have to take a lot. The take-home message from there is it's pretty hard to get toxic with mm-hmm. vitamin D. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the safety component of that message was very significant. Mm-hmm. Another paper, which will not be published or won't hit the press until December. To us is also, and I have strange publication rules here, but about kidney stones and vitamin D. There's a lot out there that's saying, don't take too much vitamin D, you might get kidney stones. Well, we took a look at our population and saw that, as a matter of fact, vitamin D had no correlation, even at very high levels, up to 100 nanograms per milliliter, with the occurrence of kidney stones.
Yeah.
So something else is going on with kidney stones, but it's not an increase in intake in vitamin D. So those are a couple of real biggies from the research people have been gracious enough to help us support.
So tell us some more about vitamin D. What else do we need to know as far as the benefits that are achieved by having an optimal level of vitamin D?
One of the things to know as a setting the stage thing is vitamin D affects almost every cell and system in your body. You might even think about it like water. You don't have water, you get dehydrated, and who knows what's going to happen, but something bad will happen. Vitamin D is that prevalent throughout the body's cells. And Dr. Robert Heaney, one of our researchers and our research director, actually, of Grassroots Health, has a marvelous statement, which is like vitamin D unlocks the genetic code. You've got all these genes, and they know what they're supposed to do, but they can't do what they need to do without the enabling factor of vitamin D there. And vitamin D is that significant. So just imagine there are so many health conditions, and another big project that we are running right now is called Protect Our Children Now. And vitamin D has a tremendous impact on preconception, pregnancy, the life of the child throughout his life. And again, I don't look at any of these as, I didn't take vitamin D during my pregnancy, I'm doomed. It's never too late. On the other hand, for any woman thinking about being pregnant, she immediately needs to go get her vitamin D serum level checked to make sure she's at least at that range. And if she's not, to get herself there even before getting pregnant. And the same would be recommended for her husband or her spouse or whatever, because vitamin D affects fertility. So there's that part. And then
can I just comment on that part? We have a huge problem with infertility around the world. We have it in the United States. I know because I spend time in Australia and New Zealand, it is a huge problem. I think 25% of the population is showing up as infertile, which could be men and women. I mean, this is a major issue because first of all, it's showing that something is really awry with our health, and secondly, it's opening up a huge industry called IVF. So these IVF fertility clinics are incredibly expensive. Going through fertility treatments exposes women to really potent carcinogenic drugs, which is what Clomid, an estrogen that is used to cause super ovulation, is really all about. So it's putting women at risk, and it's putting their potential child at risk, because exposure to these hormones while in utero could actually lead to some birth defects. So I'm just horrified, and women do rounds and rounds of this without any great success in many cases, at least the women I consult with. Very frustrating, but it also drains their resources enormously and actually creates more health problems. And, you know, when I hear you say this, it's one of the most, it should be a priority for women to do amongst looking at their overall nutritional status, is to check their vitamin D levels. You know, and that's what you're really saying to people, which is incredibly important. And I don't think that is ever advised when they go and check out their fertility at these clinics.
I don't think it is either in general, but we do have an interview coming up again on our webinar series, which is every Tuesday morning, with actually a fertility specialist who just recently spoke at a seminar at the Linus Pauling Institute, who said that he realized some years ago, this wasn't a brand new realization, that the first step that he wanted to take with women who were complaining about being infertile was nutritional adequacy. Mm-hmm. And so the very first thing he does is vitamin D supplementation as well as supplementation of other nutrients. And then they wait and see. And he says it has made a major difference because he also sees, as you do, the IBS is a very significant challenging treatment, as it were, and if you can do without it, all the better.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. So we'll make sure that people know about that. Let's give that your website again, and also you can be there live, but actually they're all archived, so people can listen to all of these lectures from all these world-class experts anytime they choose to. And of course, getting empowered and educated is my whole theme. So just give your website again, Carol, and then we'll take a break.
Sure. Our website is grassrootshealth.net, and the video site is just grassrootshealth.net/videos, and it's all right there for you at any time.
Wow, how exciting. Fantastic information. Well, let's take a break now, and we'll come back, and Carol has a lot more to share with us about the miracle of vitamin D for our health and well-being. And this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. My guest today is Carol Baggerly, and she is the founder of GrassrootsHealth.net, all about vitamin D. Stay tuned, and we will be right back with you. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and I'm so glad you're here with us today because I am having a most enlightening conversation with Carol Baggerly. She is the founder of GrassrootsHealth.net. It is the go-to website all about the benefits of vitamin D, and she hosts many fascinating webinars there with leading experts, international experts, which are freely available for you to listen to whenever it is convenient for you. And I definitely recommend you do that because we all need to get truly educated about the vitamin D story. You know, I want to go back to these levels of vitamin D because I've talked to family members, and their doctors go, well, you're in the 30s, your test came back, you're in the 30s, you're okay, and it was left at that. And I'm horrified, you know, and I do my best to tell them, no, that's not the whole story, it's actually not the truth, and you do need to increase your vitamin D levels. It's a false sense of security to believe that low number is going to protect you. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's based on old information, like 30. And there's another concept here, which is it's not just old. Different health conditions are responsive to vitamin D at different levels. And I think a lot of doctors and our individuals don't even realize that. For example, to truly prevent rickets, you only need to have a level of 20 nanograms per milliliter, and you've taken care of rickets. No more is going to help you with rickets. For bone health, it is very, very, very well established that 30 nanograms per milliliter is good enough for bone health. Like, no higher level is really going to help your bones. And that is really where I think the medical community has been established, meaning like, my physician, as I mentioned earlier, says, you have osteopenia. My D level was below 30, and that was her target, mm-hmm. because bone is very well established. But the thing that just really ticked me off with the whole vitamin D level thing was a study done by Dr. Joan Lappe and Robert Haney from Creighton University, published in 2007. They took a group of postmenopausal women, 1,100 of them, and their starting serum level was right at 28. Let's make it 30 for evenness, right? It doesn't matter too much. And over a course of 4 years, they gave them enough vitamin D to get them to right at 40 nanograms per milliliter. That group of women who had that advantage of getting that vitamin D intake as well as calcium, had a reduction in the incidence of all cancers by 77%.
Wow.
So 40, to me, is bare bones minimum. You don't ever go below that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Different diseases, like type 1 diabetes, looks like it can be largely prevented, but its level is up a little higher. So that range comes from established information, some clinical trials, and gobs of epidemiological repeatable evidence.
So what are the statistics for the United States as far as vitamin D deficiency goes?
Well, again, you have to establish what deficiency means. According to the Institute of Medicine, who established that level being below 20 nanograms per milliliter, most everybody's fine.
By your definition?
My definition, 40 nanograms per milliliter below that, you're deficient. It's close to 98% or below that.
Oh, my
the
God.
The average level in the United States is somewhere between 23 and 25 nanograms per milliliter right now, and it's going down.
Down because why? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think very simply our environmental habits. I mean, number one, we have the deficiency first and foremost because we stay out of the sun. We're working inside. Our bodies were meant to get it through the skin from the sun, flat out, all right? And we don't. So, and then you have on top of that a stay out of the sun campaign, which has been very detrimental to people, whereas the basic sun message that we get is don't burn. Get out in the sun, but don't burn. And don't put on the sunscreen until you've had enough sunshine to get your body to a... at least a beginning pink level. Mm-hmm. By the way, on that, people with tans actually have less skin cancer than people who work indoors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That sunshine is really, really necessary for us. But we're inside, or none.
Let's talk about some of the other benefits. I want to just go back. We were talking about infertility and how low vitamin D levels are associated with infertility. What about children and what about infants? Because from what I understand, you can start supplementing your child at a very early age. Is that true?
Absolutely. I want to come back to the pregnancy stage for a minute and then tackle that certainly for you. But within pregnancy, back again to other studies, a randomized trial was done by Dr. Carol Wagner and Dr. Bruce Hollis of the Medical University of South Carolina, which very clearly showed in their study that there was right at a 50% reduction in preterm births. And anybody that deals with preterm births knows that they have very significant consequences, potential consequences, everything from cerebral palsy to all kinds of things that happen as a result of that. So the actual help during the woman's pregnancy is enormous. The other thing, back again to post-pregnancy when you're nursing your child, in order for a woman to get enough vitamin D in her breast milk to nourish that child, she needs to be taking on average about 6,500 international units a day. That's what it takes to get about 400 IU in the breast milk. And that's really, really, really important, and that's been tested also by the Hollis-Wagner group. So at birth, that child easily could take 400 IU, going up to 1,000 IU by the end of the first year, and up to 2,000 IU very shortly thereafter. So the easy recommendation, rule of thumb that you can do with an infant or anybody else is about 35 IU per pound, because children need less than grown-ups or than heavier weight people. So definitely children should be supplemented.
So if a pregnant woman needs that 6,500 units a day to make 400 units...
Actually, that was meant to be specifically for the lactating woman.
For the lactating,
The pregnancy study itself used 4,000 IU a day, but that was on an average. And if you really pay attention to your serum level, you certainly might be taking more than that, but that was what they used during the study.
And really the point is that very few lactating mothers are taking that getting that amount of vitamin D in unless they've listened to your webinars. Therefore, right. their children would be, their babies that they're nursing would have very low levels of vitamin D coming from the breast milk.
That's true. That's true. And the consequences of low vitamin D during pregnancy and certainly postpartum to the infant, I mean, if the infant doesn't give enough, I'm just going to read you a quick list of these diseases.
Okay, good. I want to know.
There's some really, really big ones. Type 1 diabetes. It looks like type 1 diabetes could almost totally be prevented. In Finland, they did a research project some years ago where the infants had 2,000 international units a day, infants, you know, not 5 years later, but as born, 31 years later, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They've had the study that long. There was an 80% lower incidence of type 1 diabetes, okay, major.
So does it, are you saying it bestows a lifelong protection if you get it early in life? Is that what you're saying? Or is that what the research is saying?
That's what the research is saying.
Wow. Wow.
There's also evidence that a child born with a low vitamin D level, this one just blows me away. If this child is born of a preeclamptic mother, all right, The probability is 50% that baby will be preeclamptic if she's a female during her pregnancy 30 years later. Isn't that scary?
Do you have any idea why that is, Carol? What is it that early exposure to vitamin D would protect you for the long term? Is this a genetic thing? Is it switching on certain genes that are allowing us to have more protection? What is it?
Certainly from an immune system, but certainly, you know, I mean, everybody knows that during pregnancy, the immune system itself is developing. Everything's developing. And it's learning what's me and what's you and, you know, what do I need to protect for? So it's even in the development of the immune system during pregnancy, and as the organs themselves develop during pregnancy, I've already mentioned that vitamin D is in every cell in your body. Well, if the cells don't have enough to fully develop the brain, then lo and behold, there will be some brain difficulties.
Yeah.
So it's major during pregnancy and throughout life. There was a study of language impairment in young children. The ages were actually 5 to 10, but it was as measured back to infancy. They had a 75% lower incidence of language impairment if they had a higher level of vitamin D at birth. Same thing with neurocognitive deficits. The list just goes on and on. It's almost nonstop.
You know what is so profound about this whole message that you're sharing with us? And that is that an inexpensive vitamin can have so many benefits. And it's, you know, emphasis on inexpensive. There is no reason why every child, every mother, every person shouldn't be taking vitamin D because it is so available and so affordable and it has such an impact on our health and well-being. So, you know, I guess that's the reason why we may not be hearing that much about it, except for campaigners like yourself, because it is so affordable, non-patentable, and so effective.
Well, I think that we actually have an opportunity now, which I would like to mention briefly, which is we have such a major healthcare cost burden in the United States, as many places around the world do, but let me stick to the United States, that we now have the attention of the government to have created a thing called an Affordable Care Act. And whether or not you're in favor of that is not the important thing. The important thing is to recognize the opportunity that even the money presents to us to do something differently. And let me come back to preterm births. A preterm birth costs about $50,000, period. All right.
Mm-hmm.
At least 10% of all births are preterm births. So in one population where we're working they are saving, just multiply 50,000 times 25 or make it times 50. You've got a $2 million savings. It's just incredible. So all of a sudden, with our back again to our Protect Our Children Now campaign, we are finding businesses saying, this looks like a way to help me save money with my healthcare costs. And that's what we really see as the opportunity in the next few years, which is like, okay, here's a way to help reduce and control those as well as make people healthy.
Absolutely. It's just kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah, but it still takes a while, doesn't it?
It seems to be, you know. But before we come to the end of the show, we have a little bit time left, but I know that there are some other benefits that vitamin D bestows upon us, and maybe you can just mention some of the other things that we are enhancing by taking our vitamin D, and just again to give people this information.
Well, you mentioned inflammation, and certainly vitamin D is a big anti-inflammatory, and there's so many responses, immune system responses, that depend upon anti-inflammatories to keep them in check, and one of them is Alzheimer's. And even schizophrenia and a number of cognitive decline issues. So if you're facing later in life things, hey guys, I mean, big time impact in that area. Certainly we've always known about osteoporosis, depression. There is reason to see that people get depressed during the winter time now that's independent of, what they're eating or something. It's they don't have the sunshine and they are not taking supplements either. So that's another major thing. And it's almost like pick an age or pick a time frame and you can find something going on that matters to you.
Well, I will pick an age and a time frame. I want to pick the age of seniors. So seniors, people in senior living facilities, communities, assisted living, nursing homes. If I had one wish, I would wish that every senior would be on vitamin D and stay in optimal levels because they are severely depleted, aren't they, of their vitamin D levels?
Yes, they are. And there was a marvelous group up in Canada called Fraser Health over in the Vancouver area who has actually taken the monumental step of supplementing everybody in their institution. This is a home for the aging. They get, I believe it's 20,000 IU a week, and they certainly don't have to take it, but they're just given it, period. Here, it is. And what happens there, the one big input of vitamin D for all ages, but certainly with seniors, is pain reduction. It really seems to have a big, back again to the anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first things people comment about in our study is, you know, this musculoskeletal pain I used to have is gone. Mm-hmm. It's gone. And the other thing, certainly back again to the seniors, the reason that Fraser Health decided to do this was because falls in the elderly are extremely common, and it's as much a result of muscle weakness as anything else, and vitamin D helps the muscles. But at any rate, when a senior in one of these homes falls, the probability that they are going to die in the next 5 years is very high. Mm-hmm. And they will have extensive medical care during that 5 years at a very, very high cost. So we're back again to a very excellent financial reason to make sure these people are healthy. And then I've already mentioned a number of the cognitive areas for seniors where it matters.
And I really hope that the all my wonderful listeners who are tuning into the show will check out if your parents, grandparents are taking vitamin D because it just improves the quality of life of seniors. And that's, again, you know, so important, so easy. So I have a 90-year-old mom. I make sure she's on her vitamin D and monitor her vitamin D levels. But, you know, not enough people in her community are doing that. I think it's off the radar never made it on at all to those people, and I don't think their doctors really focus on it. And I would, you know, that's just one of the areas of my passion of getting all these seniors on to vitamin D, because it just, as you were saying in the research you quoted, could be such a big difference and a game changer for them in the quality of their life.
Oh, it is. I was doing a seminar up in Alaska a couple of years ago, and there was a lady, and I was talking about bone health and seniors and falls and stuff, and she raised her hand, and she stood up, and she says, I have to stop you right now. Like, I can't wait to tell you this. And she said, we just put my mother in a retirement home today because she couldn't stop falling, and she's now in a wheelchair. She said, if I had known this, she wouldn't be there. And my response to her, it's not too late.
Right. Well, I know people often ask the question, what about food? Can we get vitamin D in food? Do we have to supplement? What about the sunshine? How much do we need? You know, I'm out in the garden. what's the story about that, Carol?
Okay, thanks for asking that. The food, it's almost non-existent unless you like to eat whale blubber.
not easily available in
whole food. Not one of my dietary items. There is in salmon and a number of other things. Let's take salmon. There's about 400 international units. The average that a person needs on a daily basis is about 4,000 international units. Nobody is going to eat 10 servings of salmon each and every day. It's not going to happen, all right? So the servings in food are incidental. They're good, but they're incidental. The real source is the sunshine and our supplements for us at this point in time. I don't think supplements are the long-term answer. I really think we have to have a program of very active food fortification and a reintroduction of the sun into our lives. But that'll be a while coming. Sunshine, the amount that you need, depends on your latitude, your skin type, like very dark people are much more deficient and need more sun than very light-skinned people. I'm a kind of a light, medium skin. I don't burn easily. And I'm also, age matters significantly. I'm older. And in San Diego, which has a relatively low latitude, for me personally to get enough sun, we measured this, it would take about 20 minutes of full sun on my body between the hours of 10 and 2. That's really the only time the sun's high enough in the sky for you to get the UVB rays from it, with, and here's the hooker, about 40% of my body exposed. Ain't going to happen. I'm cold. It ain't going to happen. So the whole idea that you can get enough walking back and forth to your car with your arms and your whatever exposed just isn't true. It isn't true. Right. You need a lot more than that.
So the interesting point about that is, first of all, it doesn't matter how many hours you're exposed. Is it true that if you reach your maximum 20 minutes, even if you go longer, it isn't going to increase your vitamin D levels? Let me just clarify that point.
The body, right. The skin has its own self-regulating mechanism, which is after a certain period of time, it says I've had enough, and it starts destroying the excess stuff. And so you will never, never even face toxicity of vitamin D from the sunshine. The other thing I do want to mention very quickly, though, is that we are now finding that the sun does, and we always knew this, and other people know it much better than I, the sun does so much more than vitamin D. There was a paper that came out recently about nitric oxide production from the sun. And nitric oxide that is produced in the skin, which then goes into the cells very quickly, is an enormous vasodilator. It lowers blood pressure.
Right.
So there's all kinds of reasons coming out that I think will help us get a new introduction to the sun in the next 5 to 10 years, which I think will be good for all of us.
Okay, so just to repeat, if you want to get your sun exposure, do it between the hours of 10 and 2, and the sun is the highest. Try to expose
yep.
at least 40% of your body. And so we all have to go back to bikinis.
That's right.
Perish the
you
thought.
Do.
And the other thing is longer than 20 minutes will not really make a difference anyway, so try to get your 20 minutes. And it has to be in summertime.
Keep in the don't burn message, though. We don't want to burn, okay?
Right, and you don't want to burn. Carol, we're at the end. You hear that little noise in the background. That's my theme coming in because, believe it or not, we're finished. We've done an hour.
Thank
so thank you so much. I want to remind everyone to visit grassrootshealth.net. Sorry about that. Grassrootshealth.net. Sign up, get your tests done, learn, get through the webinars. Carol, thank you so much for the wonderful work you are doing and for your great information today.
My pleasure. Thank you for the interview.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining in. Remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.